From the heartland of America on the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM next hour. Witches, witchcraft, and Wicca with Rosemary Ellen Guiley as Fright Week continues leading into Ghost to Ghost on Friday night. Also, I'll be here in St. Louis for about two more weeks, but next Friday, not this Friday, next Friday, the program originates in Las Vegas. Going up there for the UFO Crash Retrieval Conference. Information on that on the coasttocoastam.com website. Wall Street had another astounding advance Tuesday, with the Dow Jones Industrial soaring nearly 900 points in their second largest gain ever as late-day bargain hunters stormed into the market. The Dow and Standard & Poor's 500 index were each up nearly 11%. There didn't appear to be any one catalyst for the surge that saw the Dow nearly double its gain in just the last hour of trading. Many analysts said investors were grabbing up stocks in the belief that the market had fallen too far in recent sessions. Some said buying early in the day came from anticipation of an interest rate cut Wednesday by the Federal Reserve. As a matter of fact, disappearing jobs, hesitant consumers, and skittish companies are reasons for the Federal Reserve to lower interest rates and brace the economy somewhat. Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke and his colleagues opened a two-day meeting late Tuesday afternoon, their last before the November elections, to make a fresh assessment of economic and financial conditions and decide their next move on rates. That decision will be announced Wednesday. I am speculating that they will drop interest rates at least 0.5%, maybe 0.75, which would be a huge interest rate cut. They've got to start doing something to get the economy going again, because these bailouts for their friends just isn't going to work. General Motors and Chrysler, they're asking the U.S. government for roughly $10 billion in an unprecedented rescue package to support a merger between GM and Chrysler. The government funding would include roughly $3 billion in exchange for preferred stock in the merged automaker. The U.S. Treasury Department is considering a request for direct aid to facilitate the merger, and a decision could come this week. You might remember years ago when Lee Iacocca headed up Chrysler, they borrowed money from the federal government to save Chrysler, and Chrysler, through Iacocca, paid the money back before it was even due. An impatient White House served notice on banks and other financial companies receiving billions of dollars in federal help to quit hoarding the money and start making loans. That's what apparently they've been doing. Catherine Austin Fitz on the line with us, managing director of Solari. Catherine, the banks are holding the money that we're giving them?
Absolutely. They
to make their balance sheet look good. They don't want to give up the cash, do they?
Well, there are a couple things, George, and we can never be sure what's going on. But essentially, they want this money to protect them from the trouble they see ahead in the economy, number one. Number two, we have The Guardian in London reporting that Wall Street is planning on paying out $70 billion in bonuses this year. So we know that 10% of the bailout is the equivalent of this year's bonuses for the companies receiving the money.
Catherine, just an amazing story. What do you think the Fed is going to do tomorrow? I'm predicting 0.5%, maybe even 0.75.
I think 0.5. That's my bet. I think 0.5, but you know, that's given how much they've dropped it already, George. That's a huge amount. And let me give you an example. The St. Louis Fed posts the aggregate monetary base figures, and the most recent post indicates that the money supply is growing at an annualized rate of 342%.
Oh, geez. Well, Catherine, we're going to just have to watch this situation unfold again. Stock market jumped nearly 900 points. People are bargain hunting, though, right now, aren't they?
Well, are they bargain hunting, or is the president's working group, known as the Plunge Protection Team, intervening?
Well, that's a good question, too. Okay, Catherine, later. Catherine Austin Fitz. The first big snowstorm of the season in the Northeast closed sections of major highways Tuesday and blacked out more than 100,000 utility customers. The National Weather Service posted a winter storm warning for parts of New York State in effect until 8 a.m. Wednesday and issued winter storm advisories for parts of Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Vermont. Pakistan hit with a huge 6.5 magnitude earthquake not too long ago. At least 80 people killed in the earthquake. 500 homes destroyed. The death toll will go higher. Scientists say they have a working prototype of a fully artificial heart ready for implanting in humans. The device beats almost exactly like the real thing using electronic sensors to regulate heart rate and blood flow. Developers now need approval from the French authorities before pushing ahead with clinical trials. But heart experts warn that it was still early days as previous attempts to create a fully artificial heart that had failed during human testing. Man, how would you like to be the first person to have a completely, fully artificial heart? A Romanian man has put his 25-year-old wife up for sale on a website specializing in used cars. He originally wanted $6 million for her. He lowered his price to $5,000 for a quick sale. No takers. He's serious. So are some of the buyers who offered less money or maybe to buy her in installments. Red may be the color of love for a reason. It makes men feel more amorous towards women, according to a new study. From ancient rituals to those red paper lace hearts on Valentine's, red has been tied to the passions and romance in many cultures over the course of history. A number of psychological experiments by the University of Rochester psychologists tested how different colors affected men's attitudes towards women, and red was the color. Kate Smith is a professional color expert, trend forecaster. Kate, I guess the color red really does drive guys nuts, huh?
It does.
How come?
Well, George, I know you're the master of the unexplained, but please allow me to give a little explanation as to how red may affect or does affect us. It really has a physiological effect that starts with it sparking something in our pituitary gland, and that sends a little message to our adrenal gland that basically sends out the hormones, epinephrine and norepinephrine. And what this does is it affects us physically, and it increases our heart rate. It forces the contractions of the heart, which get the blood flowing. It increases our oxygen consumption and also increases heat production, so which basically causes us to perspire. And it also has an effect, you know, the norepinephrine has an effect not on the metabolic or cardiac processes, but more on the blood vessels. So it constricts them and increases our blood pressure. So there really are physical reasons that as we see red or in the presence of red, that, you know, it becomes the color associated with passion. But it also is the color associated with rage and anger. So it's really the color that has, it gets our blood moving or has ties to strong arousal or emotion.
Is that why also, Kate, some restaurants have red, you know, red tablecloths and things like that?
It could be that that's what they're thinking. Red or other warm colors are often seen in restaurants and seem to stimulate our appetite, increase our sense of smell. So things smell more intensely when we're around the color red.
So women take heed, wear red if they go out on dates, huh? Or maybe not.
I was going to say, the gentlemen were willing to spend more money, they said in the study, when they took a woman on a date wearing red, so that could be kind of a fun thing. But, Professor Elliott from the University of Rochester that conducted that study had done one last year that showed that red impaired our intellectual performance in test-taking. So he's on to red.
Kate, we've got to have you back for more shows. You'd provide great information for us.
that'd be terrific.
SensationalColor.com is Kate Smith's website. Well, the so-called fictional King Solomon's mines held a treasure of gold and diamonds, but archaeologists say the real mines may have supplied the ancient king with copper. King Solomon's mines, are they possibly found in Jordan? In a moment, Glenn Kimball joins us on Coast to Coast AM. Oh, he's an expert on ancient texts and manuscripts. Here he is, Glenn Kimball, back on Coast to Coast. Hey, Glenn, how are you?
I'm doing terrific. I always turn red when I hear your name.
Passion, my friend. Pure passion. Hey, I think I'd turn red if I stumbled into King Solomon's Mines. Do you really think it exists?
I really do. I am absolutely convinced that King Solomon's Mines were very real. And we have tracking evidence of that in both archaeology and in manuscript form. So, but they're not where Jordan would like to place them. You know, every country and every culture wants to own history based on their own geographical location, and Jordan wants to own King Solomon's Mines. But as you well note in the release that was given, the place that they found, which, by the way, was along the Silk Trade routes to the Far East from Caesarea in Judea.
Yes.
This was a mine, a copper mine. They needed a lot of copper back at the time of the building of the pyramids, and all the way to the time of Christ, because they used copper in the making, first of all, pure copper, and then later on to make bronze. And copper was the only metal that they had. They didn't have iron at that point in time. And so the amount of copper that they needed to build great monuments, to carve stones and to use as ornaments and tools and weapons and all kinds of things, exceeded the capabilities of the mines that existed. They had a mine in Africa. They had mines in Arabia. They controlled the mines in Jordan. And they went as far as Spain to get their copper and beyond. The Phoenicians were famous at the time of Hatshepsut and before, and that extends back to 1800 years B.C., where they would bring barges of copper in. They would park off Heliopolis, where Cairo is today, about 2 miles off, the Phoenicians would, and they would exchange a single boat, communique with the shore, and then they would unload these great big ingots that look like someone had staked out a hide. They call them the hide ingots in many respects. They call them the buffalo hide ingots.
How much treasure did he have?
King Solomon had an enormous amount of treasure because he married on purpose and deliberately all of the daughters of the kings that surrounded him. And from the smaller provinces, he took concubines. And so when he, at the very end, he had an enormous household. And each of them paid him tribute because of his position along the Silk Trade routes, and because he was also the one who would have built the original temple there in the 9th century B.C. He also built other temples and other edifices, but he amassed it from from the dowries of these women. And if you had 600 wives and each of them had provided you a dowry, let me get in line. You know, I think I could handle it. But
nowadays, it's the other way around.
Yeah, when you get married, you hand them your credit cards and your checkbook.
That's it. No King Solomon mine for us, Glenn. Give me a little history lesson. King Solomon was the son, was he not, of King David of Israel?
Yeah, of course. Yes, he was indeed. And he did amass an enormous amount of gold. The Temple of Solomon was, the walls were lined with gold. And even when they rebuilt the temple at the time of the liberation of the Jews from Babylon, the temple, the second temple that they built was lined with gold. As a matter of fact, when they destroyed the temple of Herod in 79 A.D. under Caligula, they melted the walls and everything down, and they took that gold back to Rome. And by the way, that story is still on the arch there in front of the Colosseum. Mm-hmm. They melted it down, and they built the Colosseum with the gold. That's the money that they used to build the Colosseum.
Tell me a little bit about the theory that maybe King Solomon's treasures made their way to the states, North America.
Well, I don't think they made their way to the states. I think they got them from the United States. We know that the gold came from the legendary land of Ophir. And Ophir, O-P-H-I-R, many people think that that was just a city or a region, when in reality was probably an individual. In fact, we have record of that individual in the Holy Bible. King Ophir was the son or Ophir was the son of the grandson of Eber. Eber and Hebrew are the same thing. All Hebrews are descendants of the prophet Eber. He had two sons. One was Peleg, who lived during the time of the division of the world, and he went west to the Tower of Babel where the languages were confused, and he became the great patriarch of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But he had another son whose name was Joktan, who went east, and he settled the Hebrew estates in the Far East and beyond, and his son was named Ophir. And he eventually went as far as to South America. We have records. When I lived in Peru, they still had records of this great Ophir territory, and King Ophir himself having come and picked gold out of the streams and sent shiploads of gold somewhere out into the ocean in a trade mechanism back to the land under beneath the seas, beneath the South American seas, and the Egyptians called the land of Ophir the land underneath the seas. As a matter of fact, the scarab beetle, which they still worshipped at the time of Akhenaten, used to go underground, and they worshipped this beetle because he went down at night into the land of Ophir, or into the land beneath the oceans, which was the other side of the world.
Now, the Maya, are they tied into any of this?
Well, the Maya certainly are, because the land between the two was called the Tribana, which literally means the land between. The Mayans come from the legacy of the great Prince Maya, spelled the same way. And Prince Maya never set foot in the Yucatan Peninsula. He was always the prince of India. And in fact, if you look at the Teotihuacan, which are the temples in Mexico City today, you still see the remnants of carved statues of elephants, and there's never been elephants in the Americas. They have the Naga traditions, which were always the Indian Naga traditions. And there's been some confusion over the years as how in the world did we get so much knowledge from India over in the Americas, and the reason was because this was the land between Jerusalem and the Americas. This is the trade route. And so what the Phoenicians would do is they'd take a boat and they'd sail it in their clandestine fashion, sail it to the land between, and then they would unload it and put it on another boat and sell it to South America, which was the place where Ophir settled. And then they would switch back and forth so that none of the seamen knew the whole trade route. They were very protective about this trade routes because that's how they made their money. The Phoenician pirates the Phoenicians that extended for over 1,000 years, well over 1,000 years, were merchants basically, and they protected the style of boats that they used. They protected their trade routes. They protected the destination of where they got things. We know that Queen Hatshepsut, which was before Akhenaten and Moses and company, she was very curious about where the Phoenicians were getting their copper. And so she was able to break the code and find out that they were getting it from someplace from the sea down under. And she actually got a map to go, and she built 10 of her own vessels, and she sailed them to that place, which was up the Mississippi to the Great Michigan Mines, where there are 2,000 copper mines from that period of time today, and where there actually have been remnants of those same exact style of copper ingots. And so she was able to continue the great building that was going up the Nile River under Queen Hatshepsut. There's a lot of little details.
It's amazing how these modern texts, the texts that we had in school, Glenn, don't say any of this.
Well, they can't. And part of the reason why they didn't is because the mythology that Christopher Columbus discovered America and put a flag in the dirt in San Salvador, and therefore he had the right to claim this country for Spain, and subsequently other cultures in Western Europe had the had the right to claim the Americas for their own country. If we broke that, then we had no property right. That's basically it.
And well, it truly is remarkable, though, at how you're able to get this information, and it really is. Glenn Kimmel's websites are up there at coasttocoastam.com right now. He's also got a great CD out called Melchizedek's Audio CD, and you might want to listen to that. I'll be back in just a moment. Open lines in a second. Lots going on this week. West of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First-time caller line, 818-501-4721. In the wildcard line, 818-501-4109. We've got open lines for you in just a moment. Next hour, Rosemary Ellen Guiley joins us as we talk about witches, witchcraft, and Wicca, Fright Week. Hey, by the way, for a limited time, we're offering two CDs of Art Bell's interviews with the late Father Malachi Martin, the two classics. If you already own one, because we gave one out a couple years ago with the After Dark magazine subscription, and you want the other, just subscribe to the After Dark magazine, or in your renewal process, you'll get both CDs free with your subscription. Keep one to complete your set. Give the other away for Christmas if you already have one. If not, you've already got your set. Simply subscribe to After Dark by calling 1-888-727-5505 or go online at coasttocoastam.com. Well, another James Bond movie coming out soon. I have seen every James Bond flick, most of them on the big screen. I don't go to a lot of movies, but I look at them on DVD too. But I have seen every James Bond movie and almost every one on the big screen. I mean, I've always liked that. Let's go to the phones. We've got open lines for you for this hour. The next hour, Rosemary Ellen Guiley joins us as we talk about witches. Nancy in Tucson, Arizona, welcome to the program. No, it's Donna. Hey, Donna.
Hi, thank you, George. I wanted to talk to you about the elections for just a minute.
Okay.
Some of my neighbors are just sick and tired of hearing all the information, and I don't think we have it all yet. So, you know, I may be the oddball in the bunch, but I...
Now, when you say we don't have it all yet, what do you mean?
Well, on your program, you talked about 4 birth certificates for Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And I still don't know where that stands, so...
Well, where that stands, Philip Berg filed a lawsuit. He was on a couple weeks ago with Ian on Saturday, and apparently he is in court, but no one ever responded back to him in court. So technically, when you file a suit in court and the defendant does not file any response, you technically win the case. I don't know what that means in this particular case, but there was no response back. I don't know. It is a interesting situation that may or may not go away, Donna. If you look at the polls right now, Obama is leading, but there is still a very hefty undecided vote. And, you know, if you were to predict today who's going to win, all the polls will tell you that it's Obama. He's ahead. But you just never know what's going to happen in an election booth and with the 10% or so undecided. So you just don't know. But in terms of the birth certificate, I don't know if that will become an issue if Obama becomes president or not. It is not going to become an issue up till the election, because it just appears that it's just not going anywhere, and it's and that's where it sits. Let's go to east of the Rockies. We'll go to Garfield, New Jersey. Miguel, welcome to Coast, Miguel. How are you?
Hi, how you doing? I'm a first time caller.
Well, good to have you with the show.
Oh, I've been listening for a long time, but I was distant for a little while. But anyway, it was really weird. I was in touch with some of the old shows through the internet. I was happy to get a little touch, listening to some of the old stuff.
Sure.
But in any event, what was really weird, it was like my girlfriend, she's working the second shift, and it was really weird. She's very hesitant about believing about ghosts or stuff like that. But as she's driving up on Route 80, on the express lane, she sees a car And as she's driving up, she's driving really slow. She thinks it's a police officer. There might be an unmarked. She passes it alongside. She goes alongside it. She looks at it. It's a gentleman that has a baseball cap. She notices some features. It doesn't look at her. She passes him up. 2 miles down the road, the same car appears. And, you know, she's like really weird, but she goes alongside it again. She's like, maybe somebody else is like a speed trap. So she goes alongside it, and then she looks at the side, and she sees like another guy with like a baseball. So she thinks it's like the Matrix. It's like deja vu. It's like, I can't believe, but there's nobody on the road. So she sees, you know, and meanwhile, I'm here, you know, I'm listening to some of the old shows, and I'm like, oh, hon, I got to turn around and tell this. And there's nobody that was behind you? And I'm like, no. She's like, I never. And she goes, the first thing I saw was the Matrix. She's like, I never. There was nobody. But she felt. She goes, it wasn't spooky, but I thought it was really weird looking to the side. And then I never saw the car again.
Let me tell you what happened to me a few years ago. I was driving in St. Louis. On the side of the road, there was a car. With somebody out there fixing the tire, and I noticed the first three digits of the license plate, okay? And as I drove past it, you know, he was fixing his car. Nobody was stopping. He was okay. I drove past that and, you know, went up the road about a mile or so. On the side of the road was the same car with the same three digits on the license plate with the same guy fixing the tire. Now, I don't know how that happened. And I don't think I was daydreaming, and I don't think I was going through any kind of time warp or deja vu, but I'm telling you, I would have bet paychecks that that was the same car, and I don't know what happened on that. So I bet your girlfriend went through something very bizarre just like that. Pueblo, Colorado, John, west of the Rockies, welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi, John.
Hello, sir. What's now, that story you were just telling reminds me of the Creep Show or whatever, where the lady sees the hitchhiker over and over again.
Oh, yeah. That's a little scarier than my situation.
Yeah. I live about 30 miles west of Pueblo. About 2.5 hours ago, I was standing outside, and a meteor went zipping by. And, you know, it lasted 3 or 4 seconds. It wasn't like a shooting star that just dissipates in less than a second. I mean, this thing, it lit up the clouds, and it was headed west, and I was just wondering if anyone else out there saw that.
I saw one Saturday night, and you saw what yours went tonight?
Yeah, about 8:30 Mountain Time.
I got to tell you, that means good luck for you, John.
Huh.
Well, take advantage of it. I mean, that's a spectacular sight. They go by so quickly, but when they do, man, they look great. Let's go to Grand Prairie, Texas. First-time caller. Hey, CJ, what took you so long to call us?
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What's going
All right.
on?
Okay, I have a question. My question is about, first question, the people that say that they're getting abducted. Now, my question is their whole body getting abducted, or is it just like their souls getting taken?
Good question. Now, most of them physically claim that they're gone, they're taken, their bodies, everything. They're in a craft somewhere, taken away. Maybe they're just kept in it. But most of them say that it's a physical situation. Some people claim that they wake up in what is called the astral state, and their body, which is like a spirit, is floating over their body, their physical body. It goes out into the far reaches of the universe. And then they come back. They're connected with some umbilical cord, a silver cord. That's not clearly an abduction case, but most people who claim that they've been abducted, it's a physical situation for them.
I have another question. Also, okay. For like those people that say that they're getting abducted, now if they have like a spouse that's living with them, now if and they get abducted, does the spouse also get abducted with them, or
CJ, you're on. Most of the time, the spouse stays asleep. I don't know why, but they never seem to wake up. Whether whoever is abducting them has the ability to keep these people knocked out until they're done with the person they've abducted. Who knows? But generally, they just take one. There have been some cases. One of the biggest cases was Barney and Betty Hill back in New Hampshire back in the 60s. They both were taken. But very rarely is it two people. There always seems to be one from a household. But you're on, and you ask some great questions there. James in San Antonio, Texas, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi, James.
Hello. Yeah, hey. I just called about the lady who called on that Berg versus Obama lawsuit.
Yeah, yeah.
And I heard on the radio just the other day that the judge basically threw it out, that Berg wasn't in standing to bring the lawsuit forth to the courts, that the only people allowed to bring it would be like the Democratic or the Republican Party.
Interesting. Interesting.
So
I have to check in on that.
I was wondering if you could get a hold of them. And
It definitely will not be an issue before the election. It's just not going to happen. Will it become an issue afterwards if he's elected? That's a good question. I mean, what do you do if they find that out? What do you do? Let's go to our international line. Walker in Ontario, Canada. You're on Coast to Coast. Hey, Walker, what's up?
Hi, yeah, first-time caller. Talk about crazy car stories. I'm a professional truck driver, and maybe I see a lot of people on the road throughout the day. But I had a scary experience where I was changing, like I was looking in my mirror to change lanes, and I saw an old car coming in the lane. And I could see an old man with a dapper hat, and a nice, well-dressed couple, a lady in the passenger seat. Seconds later, as that same car went by, there was only the old man in the driver's seat. The lady was gone. It was really intense. It was really scary.
What happened?
It was like seeing a ghost. The passenger seat was empty as the car went by, my truck.
Now, was the car itself, was it a ghost car, or do you think just she was?
I'd imagine just she, although it was just about a year ago, and it was an older-looking car and older, like I said, dapper-looking couple in that car. But like I said, as a truck driver, you've got a big mirror, and you're looking in that mirror to change lanes, and the car's coming along, so you just wait until you have a space to change lanes.
And you guys don't miss much on the road at all. If you see
two people in
a car coming up, there's two people in the car. That's weird.
Yeah. I appreciate that. Yeah, we truck drivers, we pay attention on the road.
Oh,
sure.
Yeah. No doubt about that. Sure. Okay, Walker, thanks. Strange. Let's go to another truck driver in Waco driving around. But this is Waco, Nebraska. Shane, you're on the air with us.
Hi, this is Sean from Waco, Nebraska.
Sean, okay.
It's actually in York County.
Okay.
I saw that meteor come down. I was coming out of Lincoln, and it shot across from the left to the right. I made a wish. I just thought, well, that's a slow. I just thought a piece, you know, space junk went green, blue, and then there was a long tail. I've seen a couple of those. But what I wanted to ask you or tell you about was a story I had in 1987.
Okay.
Bigfoot in Duchesne Mountains of Utah. A friend of mine, we were up at Boy Scout camp, and he broke his arm. And we were in our little cabin, and he had his arm up in the air because he broke his arm. So he had to have, you know, the blood. He had to have his arm up. We had it splinted. And he had opened the door for some air. And he put his arm down because his hand went numb. And the tree that was looking out at about 50 yards out, the tree's arm went down, or a limb went down. And my friend, he put his arm back up. Well, the tree put its arm back up again. And he looked over at me and my other friend, Steve Draper, and he said, "Hey, come over here. This tree's alive." And we says, "Oh, Tracy." And we walked over there, and he goes, "Watch." And he put his arm back down, and the tree put its arm back down. Well, we screamed because we could see the outline of a creature, and this thing was as tall as the bottom part of an 8-foot tree where we would hung our stuff so the bears couldn't get to it. And we're talking about 11 feet where this creature had its arm up. And we slammed the door, and, you know, my friend Tracy just stood there, and he says, "What?" He goes, "The tree's alive." And we said, "That's not a tree. That's Bigfoot."
That's a great story. That is. I had one that an individual told me a couple months ago. When he was a little boy, he went duck hunting, and he had a couple ducks. And as he was walking through the woods, guess what popped out in front of him? A Bigfoot. He was absolutely petrified. And he said, "George, this thing stared at me. It was about 7 or 8 feet tall. It looked at the two ducks I was holding. It kind of grunted, kind of pointed. I knew it wanted the ducks. I handed them over to it. It took them, then it looked at me and gave me one back and left." That's incredible. And he was telling the truth. He actually saw this. Joan in Chicago, Illinois, you're on the air with us. Hello, Joanie.
Hi.
What's going on in Chicago? Is it cold up there yet? It's starting to get cold.
It's getting kind of cold. My jackets are getting thicker, and I'm going to start looking for my gloves.
Yeah, pull them out of the closet.
Yeah, or wherever they're at.
Yeah.
Anyway, I want to share the story. It's really my brother's story, but he doesn't stay up this late. So a few weeks ago, he was telling me about it. He was sitting and he was playing with his cat. He was spinning this penny on a glass tabletop, and, you know, he was watching the cat watching the penny spin. So he did this a few times, and you know, he got some really good spins going, and then all of a sudden he did this one spin, and he spun it, and it just kept spinning, and they were staring at it together, and it came to a stop standing straight up.
It's a Twilight Zone movie.
It didn't fall. Did anybody ever experience that kind of thing? Are there explanations? I don't know, but I thought it sounded really weird. And
you're supposed to keep it that way for the rest of the day.
Yes. So he called his son out of his room to show it to him, and his, you know, teenage son came out and said, "What?" You know, he looked at the penny, and he says, look at it, it was spinning, it stopped like that. He goes, "So what?" So he walks the other
I don't know if you remember, Joan, a Twilight Zone episode. That happened in the episode, and they had the ability, I think, to read people's minds. And I think something happened right at the end, and the penny fell over.
It the world stopped or ended or something. And then
something
when
happened.
Penny fell down, and then it started up again or something, and something
it
like
was
that.
Was one of those.
Right.
Yep.
There was one in the Twilight Zone.
How'd you like to make it? How'd you like to make a bet and you flip a coin and it lands on its side?
Right.
Just
it was
like
almost
that.
As amazing as
edge.
That.
Really? Okay, thanks, Joni. Let's go next to Shelley in Miami, Florida, where I'm sure it's warm and sunny, at least.
Actually,
when
it no. It's a little cold out.
Is it really? In Miami?
Yeah. I have my windows open. It's about, I don't know, I haven't looked at the news. It's maybe 50 degrees right now.
That is cold. What's going on, Shelley?
Okay, I have a ghost story to tell you, a real quick ghost story.
Oh, it better be a 30-second one, okay. Because we're almost out of time.
Okay, well, I moved in with my husband a couple months later. We were both sleeping in the bedroom, and I woke up abruptly to him screaming. And immediately I looked at the foot of the bed, and I had a nightlight at the end of the bed.
Yeah.
And the nightlight was blinded out by some dark, strange, dark figure.
You saw it and he saw it?
Yeah, we both saw it, and it dissipated into the wall. And, of course, you know, we turned on the light, and we both looked at each other, and I said, "Did you see what I saw?" And he said, "Yes." And simultaneously, we both said what we saw. It was a huge, dark figure that kind of dissipated, and it happened again.
Well, you're getting primed for Ghost to Ghost on Friday night, aren't you? Keep it up. We'll be back in a moment with Rosemary Ellen Guiley as we talk witches on Coast to Coast AM.